I'm speaking today with Max Garland, current poet laureate for the state of Wisconsin. Max Garland, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start by talking a little bit about your background. You grew up in rural western Kentucky and worked for many years as a mail carrier.
Yes.
Now, from mail carrier to poet laureate, is that an unlikely transition, or is there something of a natural progression there? Is there poetry in postal work?
Well, there are. There is a tradition of people who were literary and also had experience at the Postal Service. I think William Faulkner is probably the most famous. For me, I guess it is rather unlikely since I was a rural mail carrier in western Kentucky on the route on which I was born, a route my grandfather ran, a route that I lived on and my parents, to wind up as poet laureate of Wisconsin. That's probably the more unlikely thing. So that's, in a way, it is rather unlikely. In another way, however, a poet doesn't necessarily have to have a particular background. Poets come from all walks of life. So I think that there's plenty of examples today, particularly, of people from all sorts of backgrounds, both literary, both privileged and not privileged, finding something in poetry that was important to them at some point.
I'm curious about the moment you made the decision to leave your job at the post office and go back to school, I believe.
Yes. After I was an undergraduate, I did major in English. I wrote. I was interested in writing. I had no desire to be in the academic world anymore. I thought a writer was supposed to be out there, you know, building houses or planting trees or delivering mail. I mean, that was very much a logical place for a writer to be, in my opinion. So I wrote. I was writing on the post office. It's not like I woke up one day and decided I'm no longer going to be a mailman. I'm going to be a poet. I wrote many of the poems in my first book while I was a rural mail carrier. I think there are plenty of people out there doing all sorts of jobs with, you know, poems tucked away. It's just that at some point I thought I needed to sort of dive into it more fully. But, I was 35 years old. I almost thought I had to sort of earn the right to write about a particular kind of life rather than just go to school all my life and then start teaching immediately. I wanted to be able to communicate with people who weren't necessarily spending their entire lives studying literature. And in order to do that, I thought I had to live that life for a long time.
Coming as you do from rural Kentucky, can you speak about the influence of that place on your work, your poems?
Absolutely. For one thing, all the things that grew around me, all the creatures, the mockingbirds, the mimosas, and all of those things that filled my world. I grew up on or around a small farm. My grandparents had 100 chickens. My grandfather plowed with a mule when I was a child. I was surrounded by a sort of natural world that seemed to me almost magical. And I also realize it was also incredibly hard work to carve a living out of that. It was a working class environment. It was the South, the near South, but still there was a very much a Southern identity, which has, there were deep religious roots. So I grew up on hymns and the King James Bible and those things. That, I didn't know it at the time, but that was actually fairly good poetic training. And another negative thing in a sense is you felt sort of like you were on the outskirts of life. It seemed like all the images you saw on television or in the movies came from the North, came from cities, came from urban areas. When you heard someone with an accent, now my accent has been carved away at. It doesn't sound too Southern, but there are a few inflections still. But when you heard someone like that in the media, it was usually an object of comedy or fun. So I have to also say that there was a sense of being an outsider in terms of the larger cultural world, the literary world.
Is there a poem that you could read that reflects growing up in that area?
Yes. I'll read one that's, if anyone came of age in the 50s or early or mid-60s, this is called A Requiem for a Boomtown. And it was a small town that was growing, and it was kind of like the post-war boom. So this call it Requiem for a Boomtown. It was Sunday, 1957, and the parking lot of the Episcopal Church was the best time a tail fin ever had. The sunlight fractured itself, car after car, each one sleeker than the one before. Cars the size of small living rooms, each one more radiant. As if the families merely waited in the church, killing time, while the real worship was parked in the lot, was the sun on the grill work, or shapely along the fenders, or in the names of the animals emblazoned above the trunk latches. The real worship was in the sound of the car door closing, heavy as a vault, the settling in, and that moment of silence just before he turned her over and felt himself, the wife, the son, the daughter, lifted in the glittering wave of all a man could ever want.
I'm glad you chose that one. I like that one.
And though I have in my mind exactly where that would have taken place in Paducah, Kentucky, 50 years ago or so or more now, when you write about a specific place, when you sort of nail an experience down, write about it, you inevitably touch experiences that are common to people in other places. That's the ironic thing about knowing about the place, something about the history, observing it very closely, is that you touch similar experiences that could have happened in Rhineland or Minocqua or these other places.
When you read a poem that you wrote 10 or 15 or even 20 years ago, does it still feel fresh and relevant to you?
Sometimes it does. And often, sometimes I realize there are things in there that I'd forgotten about. And sometimes I realize that there were motives in that poem that I wasn't aware of. Sometimes you write a poem, you think, here's this experience, I'm remembering this, I want to record this. And then you finish the poem and you realize, well, it was kind of, I see now that there was another subject matter here. And then you read the poem much later and you realize, oh, I was really trying to work out something else that I wasn't even aware of. And now I see that 20 years later. That's a very interesting thing, is that what happens when you're writing a poem is that sometimes the language has its own agenda. Any musician who's improvising would know this. Sometimes it takes you places and you discover, oh, I didn't know I wanted to say this. I thought the poem was going to be about cars, but it's not really about cars.
As Poet Laureate of Wisconsin, what are your goals in that position, or is there anything you hope to share about the importance of the arts and poetry in particular?
Yes. I guess the first would be that it is not the property of the university. It is not the property of the specially trained or the educated or overeducated. Poetry affects our lives in many ways that we don't understand. If we've ever sat through a church service, if we've ever sung a hymn, if we've ever been to a funeral or memorial service or wedding or christening, if we have ever remembered a piece of a song, a lyric in our minds, we just couldn't shake it. If we've ever longed in our hearts to say something that we felt very deeply, but just struggled to find the words for, and then we tried to say it, but we realized, no, that's not it. If we've ever known that there is a difference between what we say to people on a day-to-day basis and what we feel and who we are. And if you've ever felt, experienced, or felt any of those things, then you've been in the vicinity of poetry. Sometimes you're having a conversation, you realize that somebody, wow, you put something, really, I like the way you put that. And what you're sort of thinking is, wow, that's like poetry.
Max Garland is Wisconsin's current poet laureate. He teaches at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. He's written two books, The Postal Confessions and Hunger Wide as Heaven. Max Garland, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.